Welcome, everyone, to episode 339 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about the latest heading into the restart of the 2019-2020 season. We're also going to talk about the possibility of a second bubble in Chicago for the quote-unquote Delete Eight, the eight teams that were not invited to restart the season. Before we get into all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is a man who does not cheer for a racist football team, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
You know what, Brian? I want to say that it's going good, but here's the thing. You just mentioned the Washington somethings.
Washington professional football team, yes.
Correct, yes. And so actually there was a pretty good article about this in a Danish outlet today. And I saw the link on Facebook. And like in Denmark lately, there has been this thing from certain politicians, right-wing politicians, who are basically saying it's insulting to insinuate that racism exists in Denmark, which is obviously just a ghastly thing to say.
Sure.
Now, I would need no other example of that than to just go into that Facebook comment section to an article about the Washington professional football team, because it was loaded with people basically saying, oh, now it has to stop. People are just getting way too sensitive. Should the Dallas Cowboys then change their names to something else and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just, at this point, I'm just convinced that having a Facebook account means that you're basically willingly going into a racist cesspool of hatred. It is vile on that social media platform, man. It is vile.
Yeah, I can't say I've been on it in... I post so sparingly and then don't spend any other time on there because it's just terrible. Not that Twitter is much better, but at least it's you could sort of filter out the most of the crazies.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a little bit more difficult, but I found a way that sometimes I'll go in and for a period of time I'll mute certain words.
Oh yeah,
that's nice. I don't think you can do that on Facebook. So to answer your question, I'm not doing all that well because I just get sad. I really get sad when I go on social media platforms and I just see all the hatred. And I realize people are like, oh, come on, talk basketball. But honestly, in this climate of 2020, I think it's very, very crucial that we need to talk about something other than besides basketball, because good Lord, I mean, everything in this year is just, well, it's shit. I can say shit, right?
I was about to say that's going to go on the epitaph of 2020 is I'm just sad.
Yeah.
That's the only description of this year.
That is very reasonable. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, let's go into the Delete Eight and once again be very, very saddened about the fact that we might have another situation where NBA players could get infected by COVID, because yay, 2020.
So I think Woj might have been the one to report it, but Jackie McMullen has the byline, so I'm going to cite her. Right. She reports on Thursday that the NBA is in deep discussions on a second bubble in Chicago for the eight teams that were not invited to play in Florida, enabling them to participate in a mini training camp and subsequent games against other clubs with a target date of September. The details are still being hammered out, so this is by no means final. And a lot of the teams, it sounds like, wanted to do their own sort of local mini camps and then maybe scrimmage against like one or two other teams so they don't have to be constrained to a bubble. But Michelle Roberts, the executive director of the Players Union, she was saying, hey, it's not fair if, you have 22 teams down in Orlando being subjected to these strict quarantine regulations and then these other eight teams can make up their own rules. So she was of the position that if we're going to have these eight teams converge at any point, they need to be subjected to the same rules as the ones going to Orlando.
Right.
What we had heard, when there were discussions about restarting the season, and is it going to be 30 teams, 22 teams, 16 teams, whatever. We had heard teams like the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers express interest in returning because they're saying, hey, you know, by the time the 2020-2021 season starts, which hopefully, theoretically, will be in December, we're talking about a nine-month layoff from competitive basketball for our guys, yeah. And a lot of our guys are young. Like, they need some sort of structured play is their argument. What do you think about this whole idea of a second bubble?
Well, I think the first point, just having 9 months off is too long. I certainly understand that. Look, when I am speaking out against, you know, the bubble in Orlando and now the bubble in Chicago, it's not that I don't recognize the obvious problems of having so many players, you know, just sit for such a long time. Obviously, they need structure play. Obviously, they need to get their reps in. Obviously, they need court time. This could be a huge element in their continued developments as players and people. So that is definitely crucial. But at the same time, you just have to kind of gauge it and you have to weigh it against what's the worst case outcome here. Because mm-hmm. if so many guys get hit with COVID and we're seeing like quite a number of NBA players test positive, you know, there's that hovering question above it all that I've asked repeatedly before is what's the long-term outlook of that? You know, mm-hmm. we don't know. We have not yet seen in this world someone who's a year removed from having COVID-19. So we don't know the long-term ramifications of this. What if, you know, we know at some point that there are going to be, you know, some sort of limited lung capacity. You know, this mm-hmm. is just me spitballing. We have no right. idea. So you know, going into another bubble and even doing the original bubble in Orlando, you know, it just feels a little, I know it's funny when I say it feels a little soon considering this has been a thing, you know, ever since what, November of last year. But it's still pretty new. We just don't know enough about this virus, and this would concern me. I would have the exact same concerns about the bubble in Chicago as I already do about the bubble in Orlando. I'm just overall concerned and worried.
Yeah, and unlike Orlando, where, you know, you're restarting the season, you're going to recoup a ton of lost or revenue that, so I think it was like $2 billion in revenue that was on the line. You know, the league, it's going to cost them $150 million to have this thing in Orlando, according to Brian Windhorst, but still $2 billion versus $150 million. You know, you make that sacrifice right. every time. The question for Chicago is, I mean, sure, maybe there'll be some televised like mini games or scrimmages or whatever, but I can't imagine they're going to make a ton of money off of that relative to the risk that they're incurring by bringing these teams together.
No, financially, I don't think this is a win for the NBA. I think this is just a thing to keep it fair because the teams in Orlando are going to get additional reps. They are not mm-hmm. going to sit out for 9 months. You know, having a 22 team league, you know, continue the season and going into the playoffs, you know, that is going to turn into an unfair advantage for those teams when everything comes back, and hopefully one day everything comes back normal, you know, because then what about the eight teams that have, you know, sat there for 9, maybe 10 months, because honestly, we just don't know when the league is going to resume. If there's mm-hmm. another hit, that could be postponed again. We yep. just don't know. So I get it. I get the point of it. I get having those teams, you know, get into the gym, play competitive basketball. And look, at the end of the day for me, here's what this boils down to. If NBA players and NBA coaches and management and whatever, if I was absolutely certain that everyone could be properly protected, that no one would get COVID, and I could trust everyone involved to honor a specific set of rules put in place to prevent them from getting COVID, you know what? I'll be down for it. I'd root the hell out of that. But I just don't. In mm-hmm. the bubble in Orlando, you know, you're seeing what's going on in Florida right now with the COVID cases. It's insane. Like, it is right. literally insane. Now, if something similar were to happen in Chicago and the risk is just so great, you know, then it becomes a non-issue. But Yeah, I think I have a hard time understanding this whole, you know, money versus lives thing. This is not something that appeals to me personally. Maybe it's because I'm a horrible socialist from Denmark. Maybe that's maybe that's why.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was one of the points in Jackie McMullen's article. She said some teams have pushed for a two-week delay before signing off because they want to see how things go in Orlando as teams converge. Like, we've seen, I think we're up to 25 positive cases among players since they've gathered for training camp. They haven't gotten to Orlando yet. So as they get to Orlando, I think, you know, the bubble or these Elite Eight teams are probably saying, hey, if we find that this Orlando situation isn't as viable as the league hoped, then there's no point in even discussing this because it's a non-starter. But if we can get everyone to Orlando and we can manage, okay, these guys, none of them are testing positive. We are actually, the bubble is working as intended. Then at least from a safety perspective, maybe it has more legs. And, right. You know, you could even argue, like, you know, if they get to Orlando and there's zero positive cases there and there were 25 before, maybe it's even safer to have players confined to one area where their contact with the outside world is limited.
Right. I mean,
with that,
that's,
oh, go ahead.
That's the optimal situation, of course. That's the optimal scenario. The thing is, do you trust? I'm just going to get to it. Having 25 players test positive, I just got to ask you this. Do you trust players to be responsible enough?
No.
Right?
Especially, I mean, because Disney World is just so far removed from, like, the rest of that area. Like, it's on a private campus. It would be very easy to track people going in and out of that area. That was my whole thing when they were talking about Vegas. It's like, how do you quarantine someone in Las Vegas without literally just locking them in their hotel room?
Right.
Taking them to and from games, to and from practices, and that's it. And the same deal with Chicago. I mean, I forget. I think Casey Johnson, was it, who was reporting some of the details about where they might have it. I forget the exact. It was like some hotel that's connected to a court somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
So are they, like, literally not allowed to leave that building?
I mean, that would help.
I mean, that's the only thing I could think of to make it as much of a bubble as we're talking about in Orlando. Like, if they're allowed to just go out in Chicago, that's not a bubble.
No, it's not. I think, you know, I don't think we would have believed going into 2020 that this is the year where we're basically trying to define what constitutes a bubble.
Right. Right. Like, how can we make sure NBA players don't contract a potentially deadly virus? So we're going to make them stay in a hotel for 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild.
But it's an interesting thing because, you know, when you have so many players testing positive, and you have the Jabari Parker situation where he goes out to play tennis after testing positive, it just speaks on, you know, at least to some players, that maybe there isn't that maturity where you're ready to actually say, okay, this is actually a very frightening thing and we should avoid it at all cost. I'm a professional basketball player. My entire, you know, income is related to me being healthy going forward. Mm-hmm. So this is concerning to me because, again, and I hate to repeat myself, we just don't know the long-term ramifications. Right. I mean, hell, even if you're a basketball team, especially one of the Elite Eight teams, most of which are rebuilding rosters, I think that's fair to say, because if you're that bad, you're rebuilding, you're trying to get back into the swing of things.
Right.
Would you be interested in potentially having some of your young franchise cornerstones, you know, go to an area in Chicago where maybe some of the other players aren't as mature and they may attract COVID, and then that gets passed on to your star player, not knowing that 2 years from now, maybe that player is simply not going to be the same kind of guy because there might be some medical consequences. Like, are you as a team willing to do that?
Right. Yeah. And then again, it begs the question of which is safer, just letting players be out on their own, or, you know, like, is there any guarantee that if we don't have this bubble and players are just out on their own that they're not going to get COVID anyway. Like, it's
right.
There's, you know, there's no good answer here, I feel like.
No, I feel that we haven't talked about anything else for like 5 months, but I still think it's extremely relevant to just bring up these points, right? I mean,
yeah,
I'm so horrified.
The world we live in. Yeah.
Right. I am so horrified about the Orlando bubble.
Yeah. Before we get to that, because there is some news on that front too, I think one other issue with the idea of this Chicago bubble is a lot of these teams, there's going to be less incentive for veterans to play, for guys coming off of injuries to play, and then for free agents to play.
Right.
You know, we're talking about a team like the Knicks where it's just a band of mercenaries, and like all of these guys basically had second-year non-guaranteed contracts or second-year team options, with the exception of Julius Randle. Like, if they have this thing, are they going to be able to field a full team? The Detroit Pistons, like, Blake Griffin isn't going to go play in this. Derrick Rose should not go play in this. You know, like, I could see the incentive for Atlanta and Cleveland and Charlotte, but like, the Golden State Warriors, did it get sent Steph and Clay to this?
Well, I mean, they're probably not, because Steve Kerr was pretty adamant that he was not interested in this format, right?
Right.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good question. Regarding the Knicks, it would basically be RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson, which I think would be hilarious. Just two players from the Knicks participating. I would love that.
I guess Kevin Knox could actually get minutes now.
That is true. Okay, three guys. Kevin Knox, here you go. You can really show the world we were wrong about you, I guess.
And Frankie Smokes will be out there too.
Is he not a restricted? I don't even know. Is this his third or fourth year?
I think it's his third, right?
Oh, okay. So he has time to prove himself. Okay, Frankie Smokes. Fine. See, this is with the Knicks, right? I bring up two names, and I'm just this is where I'm at with the Knicks. I have these two names, and I'm just like, yeah, everyone else is just of no consequence. Like, go away, the rest of New York. You have two guys.
Right.
No, but you're right. Like, the young teams would definitely benefit more so than veterans. I don't think Golden State would have... See, if you're a veteran team and you may have a nine-month layoff, I could see that kind of working in your favor. It's more so directed towards the young teams, where young players just need to have that outlet to get better and develop. But see, there are so many dynamics with this, because if you do this, do you then get, you know, clamored for ageism? Like, is that going to be a thing? The amount of subplots on this.
Yeah, I mean, like, would you be more in favor of teams just holding their own mini camps in their own markets, and then I guess throw in scrimmages against other teams? Or like, what's the better alternative here to a second bubble?
So try to explain the mini camp scenario to me. So you would have teams traveling to other stadiums?
It sounds like, I mean, I can't tell if teams are saying we just want to have our own guys back in our gym together.
Right.
And then I'm not even sure if they want to play other teams or not. I think they might just say, like, we just want to scrimmage against each other. Or I guess, yeah, I forget who pitched the idea. It might have been Keith Smith, who was saying, like, you know, we can regionally, based on where teams are, you could pretty easily do, like, Detroit and Cleveland because they're close by, Chicago and Minnesota because they're close by.
Right.
Atlanta and Charlotte because they're close by. And then who cares about the Warriors and the Knicks don't want to do this thing anyway, so they can just have their own camp.
Oh, so that's just going to open up a can of players talking to each other in these environments. That's going to be a lot of league investigations later on, huh?
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, the same thing for Orlando.
Yeah, that's true. But that's 22 teams. Having two of the same teams, you know, maybe in the same camp for maybe a couple of weeks where they scrimmage against each other. Like, could you imagine Chicago and Minnesota, just Zach LaVine and Karl Anthony Towns going, hey, we should get back together on some level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would definitely just be Minnesota recruiting all the unhappy Chicago players.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely true. Yeah. It looks like from Jackie Mack's article, it says, Teams are continuing to push for an alternative plan that will enable them to hold mini camps within their local markets and to explore the idea of establishing regional sites where teams could scrimmage against each other. Yeah. So yeah, maybe it's, maybe you even combine, you know, Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago, Minnesota as like one giant Midwest market. Then you do New York, Atlanta, Charlotte as an East Coast market, and again the Warriors don't care, so they could just have their own mini camp.
That would be nice. I think that would be really nice if that could work. And that's really the crux of the issue, because I'm also of this belief that the more, you know, bubbles that you create, like right now we have one definitively, and now we're possibly adding two, but the more bubbles you have, the larger risk of someone not like maintaining that bubble, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's so hard to say where the country is going to be in September in terms of, are we, you know, right now numbers are at an all-time high in terms of cases per day. So we're back to an issue of, do we have enough tests? Do we have the testing capacity? Like, labs are getting backed up again. You know, if we're there in September still, is it ethical for sports leagues to come back and be taking up testing resources when there are people who actually need them and can't get them?
Right. No, that's a fair point. Very fair point.
Yeah. Well, we'll need to bring Alex back on soon, because she's doing nothing now. She just started her fellowship. but she's on research, so she's just taking Zoom meetings. But yeah, I mean, going back to the point you made earlier about, like, we don't know the long-term effects of this thing. You know, she and I were talking yesterday, not about COVID specifically, but, you know, there are documented cases of people just with pneumonias, like severe pneumonias, which are, you know, the people who get hospitalized with COVID or get intubated, that's often what's going on. They have, like, bilateral pneumonia. And if you have that, there are people who years later still aren't back to where they were prior to getting sick. Like, they just, their breathing, their lung capacity is worse than it was previously. So, yeah, I mean, we know the numbers. Like, young, healthy, you know, young athletes, especially guys who aren't overweight, don't have other comorbidities, more likely than not, even if they get this, they will be fine. But you're right. Like, you're begging the question of, what if you're the one case that isn't like that? What if, you know, God forbid, like, what if Trae Young gets it and, you know, he's the one who has the bad side effects that affect the rest of his career? Can you bring him in that environment in good conscience? But then again, like, the alternative is, well, okay, let him be on his own for 9 months, and can you guarantee that he's gonna not get it there too? It's
right.
There's no good answer here.
No, but I think it could be even worse than that, because you hear Rudy Gobert saying, you know, he still hasn't gotten his sense of smell and taste back fully, right? And he said, like, his toes were tingling, and, like, there are a lot of different things that he just hadn't experienced before that are still popping up. You know, he was tested positive on March 11th.
Yep.
We are in the start of July now, and he's still feeling the repercussions of having had COVID. And he is obviously an athlete in great shape. He's definitely not overweight, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And my point is this. You know, even if we are sitting here saying, hey, you know, guys who are professional athletes are in great shape, you know, even if they recover, you know, they should be fine. Well, we don't know. We just don't know, like, in terms of a year from now, maybe something pops up. You brought up lung capacity. I think that is the most crucial thing here, because, you know, NBA players and basically professional athletes, they build up, you know, this ability of having a lot of oxygen in their lungs so they can participate for a longer period of time. If that gets compromised, we could be looking at a guy who's usually playing 30 minutes a game to having cut, you know, being forced to basically play half of that. Like, because he's just going to get gassed a lot earlier. I don't know. For me, I'm not counting my chickens whatsoever. I think it's drastic to just basically go out and say, hey, these guys will be fine. Like, I think how you framed it was very, very good. Like, more than likely, they will be fine. That's that's because, yeah, you're right. But it also opens the door to, but there might be enough chance that they won't be.
Right. Right. It's a percentage play. Right. So, you know, yeah, like, there's probably a 90-some percent chance that they will have no long-term side effects. But you're right. Like, this has been around for less than a year. There's still... we've learned a lot about it. Like, the medical community has learned a lot about it in the last few months, and they will continue. I mean, that's basically all every academic medical center is doing right now, is just a ton of COVID research. It's like, you know, Alex is taking a ton of Zoom meetings right now to try to find a research project. And they're like, well, do you want to work on COVID or do you want to work on COVID?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, we will continue to learn a lot about it, but you're right. We, by definition, just based on how long it's been around, we don't know the long-term side effects. There are still a lot of questions. I mean, my biggest question about the Orlando bubble is, can you be infectious before a test can detect that you're positive?
Right.
Because if so, that really, I mean, that increases the odds of something going wrong significantly. And I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not sure that I haven't seen anyone say definitively one way or the other. I don't know if the medical community knows the answer to that question yet. So, you know, the further along we get in this, the more that doctors and researchers will have better answers to these questions. But yeah, right. Like, we don't know how long immunity confers.
Right.
Like, is it a year? Is it multiple years? Is it a couple months? Does it matter? You know, I've seen some stuff about, like, it might matter in terms of the degree to which you got sick. Like, if you had a mild case or you were asymptomatic, maybe your antibodies aren't as strong as someone who had a severe case that was in the hospital, got intubated, whatever. There's just a lot we don't know. And it just, this second bubble, I understand the reason behind teams wanting to join together. And I can understand Michelle Roberts' point about, you know, for the sake of fairness, we need to have these eight follow the same rules as the other 22. But man, it just feels like the risk really outweighs the reward here.
Yeah. And this is another point that I've been wanting to make for a while. So let's assume that the Orlando bubble works out, everyone is healthy, and the league is concluded with a champion, no one tests positive and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We are definitely going to see a lot of people say, see, told you so, no reason to. Whereas I would look at it and going, yeah, you dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important that narrative, that second narrative, is going to be played out. Because it is undeniable right now that the NBA is running a risk. And I think that fact, that has to be presented as fact. This is not... oh, the NBA might experience something. No, this is the NBA is directly going into a situation, actively going into a situation that has a lot of risk involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to make sure that the narrative is firmly in place.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's actually a good way to transition more into the latest on the Orlando bubble. We mentioned earlier that 25 players have tested positive so far in their respective markets. They have yet to start converging upon Orlando, but that's going to start happening next week. I want to actually start with soccer or football, in your words, because Major League Soccer is also doing a similar thing to the NBA, converging upon Disney World to resume their season. And we've seen FC Dallas, on July 1st, they tweeted that the whole team departed for the tournament on June 27th. Every member of the party had tested negative for COVID prior to the club's departure. Upon arriving in Orlando, two players tested positive.
Yeah.
As league testing continued, four more players tested positive, and I believe three more since then have, so I believe the number is up to nine.
Jesus.
So if you're talking about risk, I mean, who knows how they got it, where they got it, when they got it. maybe they had it before they left and they had false negative tests. It's impossible to say. Like, I don't want to say these guys got to Orlando and like went to a nightclub right away. I don't want to accuse them of being unnecessarily risky because we just don't know. But I mean, this is the worst case scenario for the NBA right now, is something like that happening, where a team, okay, we're good to go, everyone tested negative, we're going to fly down to Orlando, we get there a couple days later, and bam, there's a massive outbreak.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have time to build a court on the International Space Station, right?
I mean, Stephen Adams yesterday is talking about, he was in New Zealand, like, people are like, why did you leave there?
Yeah.
We should have just taken the NBA to New Zealand.
Oh, boy. No, you're right. I mean, that is one of the world's best managed places. I mean, with all of this, this is where the NBA, I made this joke on Twitter. I brought it up in a previous episode. I still think it would have been such a great idea for the NBA to basically go to the safest country.
Yeah. Well, that's what hockey's doing. NHL is not having, they're having, I believe, two sites, and both are in Canada.
Yep.
Because they're like, no, we see the numbers in America. Hell no.
Yeah. We're laughing, but it's sad.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, Florida had a record number of cases yesterday. It was over 10,000 confirmed cases. Like, the numbers are only going up in Florida. And again, you just don't know. I don't want to speculate about what happened in this FC Dallas situation, but when you're talking about risk, as you were before, this is what we're dealing with. Like, there's no guarantee. The best laid plans can go to shit pretty quickly if something like that happens. And it, you know, again, it's like the questions about testing alone, like, are these tests 100% reliable? No, we know that for sure.
Yeah.
No, none of these tests are 100% reliable. So, you know, God forbid, like, one false negative could really lead to some bad news. We've seen also, I mean, so far, the Nuggets and Clippers have shut down their practice facilities because they had positive cases recently. And then Brooklyn, I think, was the big news in terms of this restart, because DeAndre Jordan has tested positive and he is not planning on traveling with the team. Wilson Chandler has opted out to spend more time with his family. And Spencer Dinwiddie has also tested positive and has not made his decision about whether he's going to play. Sean Marks said that they are going to send a team regardless, but now we're looking at, I mean, no KD, no Kyrie, no DeAndre Jordan, no Wilson Chandler, maybe no Spencer Dinwiddie. At that, like, what's the point at that point?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the G League team will get some shine, I guess. Which, you know, I was in favor of that. I think that would be a good way to do it, because, you know, the spotlight is still going to be on every team there, so why not, you know, shine a light on the G Leaguers? But yeah, no, I mean, who? Why would the Nets even do that? Why would they be willing to go there and try to be competitive when clearly, you know, most of their players are just not going to be there? It's, yeah. Well, you know, I made my opinions on this matter painfully clear. I am not a fan of the whole bubble initiative, even though I certainly understand that teams would want their players to be active. And I certainly also understand that $150 million, you know, for a $2 billion revenue is you know, worth that gamble, but, or not worth the gamble, but it's worth making that trade. I still have to question whether it's worth the gamble overall. Yeah, no, it's just beginning to get even more ridiculous by the day in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's between the spiking cases in Florida, the testing capacity, it's like, it's becoming harder and harder to justify this from anything other than a financial perspective,
right?
Which already, I mean, that, like, I've been saying this for months now, like, the NBA is going to try to gaslight you into thinking they're doing this for the greater good of the national consciousness. No, it's about money.
Yeah.
It's only about money. They don't care about anything else, which is fine. They're a business. I get it. I'm not begrudging them for that. But, like, just be honest. It's just, I mean, you are risking players' health for money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
So, I mean, they said the numbers and, like, the data was going to drive their decision-making, and clearly that's not true. Because if it was, we would not be talking about the bubble anymore. Like, given the rapid spike in cases in Florida, they would have to be coming up with a plan B, and I just don't think they can. I mean, maybe they're convinced that, you know, still, despite everything going on around the state, they're going to literally be able to keep players from interacting with anyone from the time they leave to the time they get to Walt Disney World. And maybe that's the case. We don't know. But, yeah, I mean, this is all very concerning, to say the least.
Right.
And I only hope, I mean, all of us can only hope that it goes off without a hitch. But, you know, given what happened with FC Dallas and MLS, it's like becoming harder and harder to be optimistic that everything's just going to go right.
Yeah. When you are willingly going to the home state of Florida, man, I just don't think that there is a whole lot, you know, logic involved.
Right. Yeah, maybe they should have just built courts in, like, Idaho or Wyoming or something. Just somewhere, like, so spaced out that no one's within 100 miles of them. It'd be fine. Yeah, I mean, look, I understand from the facilities perspective. You know, we had Keith on recently to explain, like, why Disney World itself, from a facilities perspective, made sense.
Right.
It's just everything around Disney World, the entire state around Disney World, that's less great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't hold anything against, like, Disney for this, because, like Keith said on this podcast as well, like, the place is just enormous, absolutely right. Enormous. This isn't about the facilities. Theoretically, the facilities are fine and actually completely optimized to support this particular form of pandemic. However, mm-hmm. This is a matter of the infrastructure that is around within, you know, when the NBA visits. If one player breaks the bubble, or, like, yeah, you said, the testing kits, it's the questions around that. The actual Orlando idea on its surface is excellent. Like, I have no qualms with that. That is actually a stroke of brilliance. It is it's the entire setup around it, as you just said. It like, testing kits, player discipline in terms mm-hmm. of staying inside, you know, having some workers maybe who aren't tested or whatever, like, just not making it a full-on bubble. Adam Silver going back and forth from, I guess, New York to Orlando for whatever reason. Like, no, it is the entire arrangement around it that I'm nervous about. Plus, like you just said, the fact that Florida is basically becoming the world's largest cesspool of COVID. What the hell is happening down there?
I think we know. Yeah. I mean, look, I just moved from Tennessee to Maryland, and I can't tell you how different it is between there and here.
Yeah.
And apparently now Tennessee numbers are spiking. We were talking to some friends last night, and they said the Nashville area, Davidson County, hit an all-time high yesterday. And it's like, well, yeah, because they reopened, you know, dining restaurants have been open for a while now, and people just are taking these cues as these things are open, they're safe. Yeah. And they go back right away. Like, in, God, early or mid-May, I would go, like, pick up food for takeout, and, like, indoor restaurants would be packed.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing here? How are we thinking? Like, nothing has changed fundamentally about the virus from March to May. Like, everything we know about its infectiousness and how it transmits is the same. Why would we think these activities are safe now versus 2 months ago when they very clearly weren't?
Right.
But in Maryland, you know, people are being a lot more cautious. And we were talking to some people from New York who, you know, like the cool thing is with all these people starting fellowship is we're getting to see, you know, what everyone's experience was like all over the country. So one of Alex's new co-fellows is from New York, and they showed up to this, like they had this orientation dinner where we were all socially distanced, but they showed up in masks and they said, like, if you walk outside of your apartment in New York and you're not wearing a mask, you get dirty looks.
Yeah, that's as it should be.
Right, but that's definitely not the case in the South.
Right.
Like, the South bars are open. I mean, there was a picture at this Kid Rock's Big Ass Honky Tonk is what it's called. I think it was either Memorial Day weekend or the weekend after. It might have been the first weekend in June. And there's a picture, like, go online. They got cited for this, and they lost their liquor license temporarily. But, like, it was just like any normal Friday night. Like, people are packed in there. Inside, packed in, shoulder to shoulder, going up to the bar, all of which was not allowed in the phase that Nashville was in at the time. But it's like, I mean, again, I understand people wanting to like get out, you know, it's been months since we could all do something fun and, you know, go out and resume our normal lives. But like, I've been saying this since March. This is not a days or weeks thing. This is a months or years thing. Like, we have to fundamentally change our behavior until we have either a proven treatment or a vaccine, right. Neither of which we have right now.
Right.
So, you know, tying this back to the South and Florida in particular, like, we know what's happening in Florida. There is a governor who does not give a damn about this pandemic or has, you know, has taken his lead from the president, who also doesn't give a damn and is not, you know, refusing to wear a mask, like not rushing the reopening of his economy for political reasons. This is there is a cause and an effect. This is the effect. If you're going to, you know, your actions have consequences, and we're seeing it play out all throughout the South and the West right now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit different here in Denmark, obviously. We've taken it very, very serious from the get-go. So we've reached that point where we can actually walk around without most of us at least wearing masks. But we keep like a very safe distance. But even then, you know, we are seeing, especially with young people still, who are taking that liberty just a little bit too far. And I think that's really the crux of the issue, right? It's one thing to social distance and like still go out and be together, but wearing masks or at least like keeping apart. I think that's fine depending on where you are considering. Like, you have to look at, you know, where you are in terms of how is the spread looking. Because none of us would do this if our numbers were spiking, for example. But given that our curve is somewhat low, you know, we have certain, like, I guess luxuries is the best word, because we have a firm grasp of how we're going to deal with it. But as soon as we see young people act differently towards it, we actually kind of go back into ourselves and we go, uh-oh, we're seeing signs that this could return, because the young people are not wearing masks, they're not social distancing, they're not doing all these things. So over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be extra, you know, extra safe. I'm going to be even more careful than I am usually. And I think when you look at Orlando and Texas and stuff like that, it seems like there's this mentality of people basically saying, well, screw that. Screw everything. This is my right as an American to not wear a mask, and I refuse it. And it's unconstitutional, where I don't know where the hell they got that from.
It was in page 6 of the Constitution. Oh. Thou shalt not have to wear masks during a global pandemic. Oh. Have you not read?
I have not, admittedly. Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense, obviously. but it's a different fight. I think over here, you know, in Europe generally, we are not making it an issue of human rights. We're making it an issue of health and trying to look out for our elders and our weak. Whereas in the States, it's just pivoted into becoming this whole political subject.
Yeah.
Which I'm dumbfounded at that idea.
It is outrageously stupid. Yes.
Okay. Yes. See, this is me trying to be kind and saying what you can say outright because you're an American. Good.
Yep. And I am married to a pulmonary critical care specialist who will be treating all of these patients. Like, she's going to get called in a couple months when the second wave hits up here. I mean, thankfully, numbers of the Northeast are down. So, like, she's fine for now. But, like, she's going to be treating these patients because people are not, Like we've just gone back to thinking we can go back to normal life. Like we're still not there, guys.
No, so. We don't. We simply don't know enough about this thing. And it's it almost sounds like we're in an episode of Dunked On right now, just basically making it COVID related. I gotta say though, I think it's important to get to talk about this, even for our you and I, our own sanity, just to talk this out, because this is just swallowing up the world right now, and we need to make it a topic.
And I mean, it's going to affect the NBA. We can talk in our next episode. We'll go back to talking about the on-court, like fun stuff like that. But that's all theoretical, because if there's one COVID outbreak at Disney, if there's one bad one, none of this matters, because the league's going to have to shut down again.
Right. I want to ask you one big question that I've kind of refrained from, because I don't want to make it like clickbaity. And to make it sound like something fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if a player dies? Not just gets COVID, but dies from COVID.
Yeah. It's a good question.
It's a question that I haven't really dared bringing up to the same extent before. I brought it up in passing, but I think we need to go into that question. I think we need to just dig deep. What would the ramifications be for the NBA long term if a player attracts COVID and as a result of that COVID dies?
Yeah, I don't know the answer. Like from a legal or liability perspective, or just
perception and like branding, everything. Basically, I think, and this is the risk that I was kind of talking about. Like one thing is we're talking about long term ramifications if a player attracts it and his lung capacity decreases and what else. But I'm talking about the step further. Just if someone loses their life because of this, I mean, would the NBA even return the following season? What would be the protocol here? Is that something that, understand my point here. I don't hope for this to happen, but is that something that almost needs to happen for people to wake up? Like where are we in that discussion? That's where I'm wondering. Does a player have to die before people wake up?
Or just get serious? I mean, like the Gobert positive test was, I don't want to say that's what like changed the national consciousness of this, but that at least brought it to the forefront. Like that was the first domino to fall. And then very quickly thereafter, I mean, God, that was one of the craziest days of work I've ever had. Yeah. Was like, let's just track all of these changes on a minute by minute basis of like every single tournament, college basketball tournament canceling. And then like, every major sports league going on hiatus. And it's like one after another, every 5 seconds. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that's going to be hanging over not only the NBA, but every major sports league that comes back. Is like, this is the worst case scenario. I guess the counterpoint to that is, hypothetically, that could happen like anytime you're doing anything really, but especially playing basketball. Like, God forbid someone goes up to block a shot and gets flipped in midair and like lands on his neck. Like, it could happen. Regardless, we see it more in like boxing, especially where guys get like brain hemorrhages basically and not necessarily die in the ring, but have to go pretty quickly thereafter to the hospital and die there. So
one day you'll have to, like when we're off air, you're gonna have to explain to me the attraction of boxing.
I don't know.
Okay.
So I guess you could say that, from the liability perspective, at least I would guess that would cover the NBA to some extent. But it's a very fair question. Like this, that is the risk that players, coaches, anyone going to Orlando has hovering over them. And I think, honestly, we should be, just from the odds perspective,
right?
I think, coaches would be the bigger concern. Some of the older coaches especially would be a bigger concern than the players. It's like that's the worst case scenario, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's hanging over all of this is like, okay, yeah, we're going to recoup $1 billion, some amount of money, maybe $2 billion. Great. But like, if someone dies, is it worth it?
No. No, of course it's not. Of course it's not. At no point should financials be worth more than lives. I don't care what any Republican politician has said over the past few months.
Right.
And let's not kid ourselves. They have absolutely said as much, that the U.S. economy is worth several lives. And it's not. I think for the NBA here, this is just the crux of the issue. This is the one thing that they have to sit down and ask themselves. And I don't doubt for a second that question has popped up at some point. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if most of the NBA executives have kind of turned a blind eye to that and basically said, well, that's an extreme that we don't – let's not entertain that extreme yet. Because, look, the rate of people – actually turning out fine is far higher than people dying, and our guys are obviously elite athletes, so let's not even go down that route. But I don't think it's fair to do that, because as you and I have talked about before, we have also seen cases around the world where perfectly healthy people in their mid-20s have actually died from this. We have seen it. This is not some myth. We have seen perfectly healthy young people die from coronavirus. And I think we have just not spent enough time to actually ask the biggest question that is or should be out there, which is, people or the NBA are risking that they get coronavirus, but are they risking the loss of life?
Right. I mean, in general, look, we don't know what the NBA's like the full scope of the plan is, or like their emergency plan, contingency plan, anything like that. But in general, it does feel like they're kind of in the let's deal with it when it happens mindset. Like, because people have asked Adam Silver repeatedly, like, okay, well, what happens if someone gets coronavirus while you're in the bubble? And he's like, we're going to self-quarantine, isolate them, quarantine them, and continue play. And then the ensuing question is always, okay, well, what's the threshold where we have to shut down play again?
Yeah.
Like, how big does the outbreak have to be to shut down play? And his answer is always, we'll see. Like, we don't know. And I get it, because, it's probably impossible to say until you have to deal with that situation. But you got to have some plan in place. And, I don't know. Like, I think... you run into the same question here. Like, what happens if someone gets hospitalized with COVID?
Yeah.
Like, are you going to continue playing? I don't know the answer. Probably.
Yeah. That I was going to say that probably they are, right? It's probably going to be one of those things where they ask themselves, what's the prognosis? Right. Does it look like this player will have a full recovery? Oh, okay, fine. Because we've had, certain players at least test positive. Maybe not someone who's hospitalized, but, we're going to play the odds here. And that's why I'm going to this extreme of asking about a death. Because I have to assume, right? Maybe I'm just being naive, but I have to assume that if an NBA player tests positive and dies in Orlando as a direct result of having to go to this bubble, like where he attracts the virus in Orlando, that has to be like the end of it, right? You have to shut everything down. You have to basically suspend the whole league for a while to figure out what the hell happened. There's going to be liability issues. There's going to be a lot of media coverage. It's all going to go to hell. And what I just want to know is, has the NBA considered that? Has the NBA gone through this whole simulation of the worst case scenario?
Right.
I think we need to have someone ask Adam Silver that.
I'm sure they have, but I don't know what the answer is to, how do they react to it?
Right.
I'm sure, the answer is they hope they never have to deal with this.
Correct.
But that's why you run these types of simulations. Like, you have to play out the worst case scenario just to be ready for it.
Right.
Like, if you're incurring this kind of risk, you need to be ready for what could go wrong here. And that is the ultimate what can go wrong.
Yeah. I'm sorry to be a Debbie Downer. It's just this is a question that's been on my mind a lot recently, because I think whenever I see, you know, read articles about this or listen to podcasts where they're talking about this, it seems like everyone is just kind of beating around the bush. It seems like no one is actually talking about this particular outcome, which I understand that this plays against the odds and the percentages. I'm fully aware of this being like the worst case scenario, obviously. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to happen. I do believe the fact that they are so young and so, you know, their bodies are so athletic and healthy that is going to prove enough to not go into that. But I just think that it's important to actually ask the question. I think it's important to bring it up and have a dialogue about it.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And we're not going to have the answers to these questions. And I don't think the NBA has the answers to these questions yet. But it is it's something worth discussing, just as, like, we need to all be aware. Like, we're all excited for the NBA to come back, of course. But, like, this should be lingering in the back of all of our minds the whole time. Right. Like, we should not just, like, go in and be like, yeah, the NBA's back. No worries at all. Like, you know, it's great. I'm going to watch every minute of it, but I would be nervous as hell the entire time.
Right. I don't remember who said this. I listened to Zach Lowe. I listened to Howard Beck and Vogt and all those guys. So I don't remember on which podcast it was that this point was brought up. Someone said that technically when the Orlando bubble starts and the game starts, whenever two players are going to be very, very close in proximity with one another, like in the post, and they're like banging up against each other, like that is going to be the first thought that's going to pop into people's heads is, oh my God, they are really close.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, look at the footwork. It's going to be, oh boy, let's hope one of them doesn't have coronavirus.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Well, on that uplifting note,
yay for positivity. Sorry about that, people out there. But look, we have to eat our vegetables, and this was the broccoli.
This was definitely a cauliflower episode. Yeah. But I promise the next one we're gonna talk about some potential dark horse title contenders. So you can look forward to that in a couple days. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. And I think it couldn't be more appropriate to say, don't die.